Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to, or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie. And as always, it is my pleasure and my honor to spend time with you right now. Thanks to those of you who are able to join us live, and thanks also to those of you who download the archives, download the MP3 files, and listen to us that way as well. We are here to provide you with new ways to look at things, new resources, new websites, new strategies. And we ask you to consider taking an action on something that you learn when you're here with us at Spark. Because it's only when we act that we truly learn, we truly know. So I hope that you have done something. If you're a regular listener and you listened last week as we were talking about sparks of changing seasons and how it gives us a time to reflect and project as to what we would like to do differently, especially as we're in the last quarter of 2009 right now. In the Northern Hemisphere, where we live, it is a very cold fall season still. My son, who is 8, was doing the happy dance Saturday morning in the snowfall, and it didn't stick, but it was very early. He was very happy. And so just a reminder that the same conditions that can cause stress in one person can cause excitement or elation in someone else. It's all a matter of choosing your perspective. What do you want to learn from that situation so that you have lessons or opportunities in your life rather than stresses or challenges? So you're welcome to visit any of our archive segments to learn more about any of the topics that we've talked about. If there's something that you think would be useful or helpful for you, we hope that you find it. And we invite you to visit our website, www.brainbonanza, that's BRAINBONANZA.com, to learn more about the resources we have, the services that I provide, and also if you're interested in the murder game, which is the topic of our show tonight, that will explore the adventure of invention of the murder game, how it came about, as well as exploring the fun that's involved with playing the murder game. And I'm very excited to share with you my guest tonight, Dave Hunt, and I'm going to cross my fingers that all the technology is working, and I'll say welcome, Dave.
Yes, I hope the technology is working. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. It would only fit if the technology went on the fritz tonight when we're talking to you. But so far, so good. How are you?
I'm doing well, and you're right. We're at 100% for technology, and that's quite a surprise for me.
Well, good. And so I will let you get started by just talking a little bit about... Yeah, who is Dave Hunt?
You know, I looked at some potential questions you might ask, and I think that was the most difficult of all of them. I think I'm defined, as we all are by what we've done, our careers, but also by who we are. So I guess I'd say that I'm certainly an educator and have been all my life, whether it's professionally or just as a hobby. I taught for 31 years. I still work with Upward Bound. I'm spontaneous. I think I'm creative. I'm certainly a spur-of-the-moment sort of person. I'm outspoken. You'll always know what I think about things. And I'm somewhat opinionated. I guess that's just a very, very brief snapshot.
Yes, and it's hard to believe that you taught for 31 years. Do you feel that old, Dave?
You know, I always said that teaching is an interesting job because it will either keep you, it'll either make you old or keep you young. And I really think that if you we've all been to school or are in school. And if we think about the people that we've dealt with, I think you'll see some people that fit both of those molds. I think the students kept me young, their energy, their creativity. And I think the profession allowed me, and I was lucky in where I got to teach. I'm a real believer in small schools because I got to be spontaneous and I got to create things. And I would often create things in the middle of the class because a brainstorm would hit. Things are becoming much more regimented now, and I think it would be more difficult for me to be as comfortable as I was and to allow the students to keep me as young as they did.
Well, and having been through that system and known people over the decades who enjoyed your creativity in the classroom as well as outside the classroom, so you know that you touched a lot of lives through the classroom, and I want to talk a little bit about your adventure of invention tonight. What inspired you to create the murder game?
Well, you know, it was really interesting. I've thought back on it, and part of it was when I was a kid, I was asthmatic, severely asthmatic. And while I would never go through that again, I think as I look back at my life, some of the negatives had positive outcomes as well. And one was being not able to do a lot of things from time to time. I certainly got to stretch my imagination. And I became an avid reader and was a reader of suspense and mystery stories. And Agatha Christie wrote one, and it has two names. They've made movies out of it. It's called And Then There Were None or Ten Little Indians. And as I read that book, I was just absolutely captivated by it. And it's the stress and the not knowing what was happening next and sort of the built-in excitement. And I remember thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to be able to create an environment where people could put themselves in that sort of a situation without any real danger? And so it comes from that book. It comes from the game Clue, because you start talking about in Clue methods, who did it, how they did it, where they did it. And then there was a game that circulated when I was in college called Assassin. And it was extremely primitive by today's standards because you had to mail in that you were interested in playing by snail mail. And I honestly never played it, but having heard about it, it talked a lot about methods. You'd get a letter back saying you were either the assassin or you were a potential victim, and it would say something like, you're a potential victim, watch out. And then you'd come to your dorm room, and you'd open it, and there'd be a little string that would say, oops, you just died. So that got me thinking more about methods. And then when I was in college, I put together a very primitive version when I was in high school. And then I was just sitting around in college with a friend of mine, and I mentioned this, and he asked me a bunch of questions, and that got me to thinking more and beginning to fuse this all together. And so then he helped me. We actually wrote it up, and we invited a bunch of friends over to play on a Christmas break. And when you invent something that's kind of a role-playing game, you don't know, or at least I didn't know, whether it was going to work or not. And it's kind of difficult to get a bunch of people to commit one of their nights to this game when, in fact, the thing might turn out to be incredibly boring. But I had 9 brave souls that tried it, including a friend of mine talked to another guy and said, well, we're going to go play murder. And his first response was, oh, well, great, but I'll be playing Cowboys and Indians first. But he came reluctantly. We had a tremendous time. The guy who made the snide remark about Cowboys and Indians hosted a couple games at his house. His grandmother played. It was quite exciting. It worked out better than I could have hoped.
Well, and as you said, you weren't sure how it would go in terms of how it would play out. And
right.
In that journey, in that process, you did some testing, didn't you?
You know, that's a great question. In reality, no. I mean, the only way to test this is to actually play it.
Well, did you tweak the, and I'm going to get ahead of myself in the questions, but did you tweak the activity cards?
Oh, not really, because the way it's set up, the activities are fairly general, and we provide blank activity cards. So in the instructions, I note that you, the individual who are playing, can tweak the activity cards to whatever you might have in your particular house.
Okay.
And then
at one point we had talked about that in terms of doing the timing for how long people were in different places.
Well, and I'm one for thinking about things through, a lot of times, through discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd often run it by people. Well, what do you think if? And so there was a lot of talking that went on. I had some friends that were very into gaming. And so a lot of talking went on. And then when we put things together, we wanted to see if it worked, and then the option was open to tweak it afterwards. But as luck would have it, it seemed to work out fine the way it was.
So you said that you created it when you were in college. Now, are you going to give a date, or are you going to leave it there?
I polished it when I was in college.
Okay.
The original spark was actually when I was in high school. So if you were an alum of Luther College, and you were to go back and find that a Chips magazine from, it would be, if I'm not mistaken, the winter, the January of 71, I think, or 70. I'm getting so old I can't remember. But if you were to find it, there would be an actual headline, and it would say, three students murdered at Luther College. I was on a J term in Madison at the time. And I picked it up and went, holy moly. And then I read the first line and I realized that was the year that the psych and the social department used the murder game as a J term class. And they were looking at how would it affect you. Here you are put in the situation. If you were with your spouse or your girlfriend, would it make a difference in how you related to them? And then also statistically, depending on what your particular cards were, did that enhance your chance of being killed? So they had written up this article about it. One of my friends had this old Corvette, and it talked about somebody leaving in a Corvette. And I went, aha, I know what it's about now.
Wow, and this is a story I hadn't heard before. See, it's always nice when I continue to learn right along with my listeners. Okay, so now we've kind of hinted at some things about the game. Well, how do you play the murder game?
Okay, this will be a very nutshell sort of thing. But the first thing you need, and this is why when I did this, this was honestly a labor of love. I feel great that I have actually copyrighted something. And so if I never made a dime out of it, that was fine with me, because first of all, it takes at least 8 or 9 people to play it. And you need a house to play it in. You can't play it in a dorm room. It's not like a board game that's going to be extremely usable across the board. So the first thing you need is a house. Old Victorians are particularly great for this. The house is all candlelit or using little plug-in bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
So in this dark house, everybody will get an envelope, and in that envelope there will be 2 activity cards. And activity cards will tell you various things to do. Get something to drink, read a book, socialize, start a conversation, watch TV, etc. And it has an approximate amount of time with each activity. If you're told, or you may be told, to take a nap, and there you're designated as a light or heavy sleeper, that's one of those little innovations that turned out to be a much that enhanced the game a lot more than I thought it would when I put it in there. So you start doing your activity cards. In one, you just pick one or the other, and then just go down one and then start the other one. And then try and approximate the time. Then one person in their envelope has "You are the murderer," and it lists the 10, I think there's 10 different ways you can kill off the other players. It also has activity cards in it. The murderer doesn't have to follow them, but if it's a new player, they'll have a feel for what everybody else is doing so they won't stand out. Some people get pretty sophisticated about watching other people. Then also all the potential victims have a variation card. And the variation card is things like, if you're stuffed in a closet, start moaning after 10 minutes, or fall out when the next person comes in the room, or if somebody comes at you with a knife and you see it, you can scream, or you can tell people how you were killed, those sorts of things. Let's see. And basically, what you're buying is you're buying the idea and the cards. So that what happens then is, as the people go about their business, you as the murderer find one, kill them in whatever way you wish. Some are direct and some are indirect. So you could strangle them or bludgeon them. Or if you, there's always going to be pop, or there's going to be some kind of drink, and it's going to be poured in cups. So you can mark certain number of cups to poison somebody. And SPDT is standard poison dying time. That's 3 minutes. So the person that drinks it, the way you know you're poisoned is you just look on the bottom of the cup subtly to see if there's an X there. And then you die in 3 minutes. Or you may have a variation card that says die immediately, or live for another 20 minutes and die. So we've had people fall over right in the middle of a crowd, all sorts of things like that. Well, anyway, so then what happens is the murderer will eventually, somebody's going to die either from an indirect method or the murderer is going to directly kill them. When the murderer kills somebody, they can stash them anywhere in the room in which they kill them. You can't order somebody to go down to another room or something. But I've been under desks, under beds, in closets, all sorts of places. So you can stuff them anywhere in the room. And then when somebody finally discovers a body, you yell "body" loud enough for everybody to hear. Everybody comes up and takes a look, because there may be a clue about how the person was killed by how they're lying, or things of that nature. Then every mystery story has the meeting where they're all sitting there and discussing it. So you meet in the prescribed meeting room. Everybody tells their story. You must tell the truth, no matter how incriminating it looks, except the murderer, who can lie at will. When all the evidence has been put forth, you then vote by secret ballot. The bodies then become scorekeepers, candle maintainers, and so forth. So the body goes in and counts up the votes. If less than 2/3 are correct, then they announce the murderer is still at large. Now, there were some playtesting things, and one of them was this. They'd say, "He's still at large." Well, they said, "He's still at large. It can't be one of the women or girls that are playing." So the standard line is the murderer is still at large. Then the first thing that happens is people may not have shown up for the meeting. Now, that either means that they're heavy sleepers and they didn't hear anybody yell, or they're stuffed in a closet somewhere, and obviously they're dead, or it's the murderer pretending to sleep through the meeting. So one time we had 15 people playing, found a body, but instead of 14 people showing up, only 10 of us showed up. Now, the other four are still potential suspects, because it could be the murderer pretending to be a heavy sleeper. When the meeting is over, you go try and... That's the one time. You can't be a detective. This is the one time you get to go look through things. And so you're rummaging in closets or whatnot. Now, that does provide an extra special opportunity for the murderer, because if you're already in a closet, it's pretty easy to kill you and just leave you in there. Okay, let's see. That was the thumbnail sketch. Did I leave anything out?
Oh, no, I think that sounds good. And I think in all the years that I had played, I don't think I ever played in a game where the murderer pretended to be a heavy sleeper.
No, it's rare, and it's surprising, because I always say that. I have had it happen a couple times in games that I've been in.
Oh. Well, and before we go further, you have age restrictions on the game, don't you?
Yeah. I have said, and I don't have one right in front of me. I think I said 13.
Yeah, I'm thinking 13 or 14. I shipped another one out today, so I don't have it in front
of me. Oh, okay. Well, the point was, I felt that high school students would probably be able to play it. And
mm-hmm.
over the years, because I work with Upward Bound and I teach during the year, many, many, many of my students have played it. So I know that high school students have played it. Perhaps even middle school if you got mature people. And there are occasionally people who I know we discover it occasionally in Upward Bound, where we get somebody who just isn't quite mature enough to handle it. But that's actually pretty rare. And I know a lot of my students have played, former students play.
Okay. So, yeah, you do want to have a certain amount of maturity to deal with.
I think, because it's not just running around and screaming and being crazy. The scariest games are when you let it happen. You can't make it. If you really want a game, and there are games that are talked about 20 years after they were played because they really became spooky and scary, and that's largely because the people let the events unfold instead of trying to make it into something that maybe wasn't in the cards.
Ah. Well, personally, Dave, what do you enjoy about playing the murder game?
I think the best ones are the ones where I can get the same feeling that I got when I read the book Ten Little Indians. Oh, my God, they got somebody else. I don't have a clue who it is who's doing this. This is really scary. Who's going to be next?
Well, and have you ever been scared to the point of elevated heart rate, respiration?
No, and I'm not one to get scared either. I mean, I'm not. So when I made that last description, that is actually an intellectual thought that goes through my head.
Oh, okay.
However, I have been actually the hair on the back of my neck stood up one time. And it's for anybody that's listening that might be an old Luther grad, there's a building called Sunnyside where we used to play. It was an office building for us. And I was told to go into the study to write a letter. So I'm sitting there, and it's only got two candles in the room, and I became absolutely convinced that somebody was dead in the closet. I mean, just as sure, but you can't look. But I was just as sure as I could possibly be that there was a body in the closet. And the hair was standing up on the back of my neck, and I was shaking my head, and I thought, this isn't like me. Well, sure enough, they yelled body. They found somebody upstairs. So we go look, and we all troop into the meeting room. And we have the vote, and the murderer was still at large. So then you go out looking for the body. Well, I ran immediately to that closet, opened the door, and there was one person missing, and she fell out.
Oh, my God.
Well, then, of course, it came time for the meeting. And the first question somebody asked is, who's been in the study? So my hand goes up, and then they wanted to know why I went right to the closet, and I told them the truth, what I just told you. Well, it was obvious that the only other person who'd been in the room was the murderer, who, of course, nobody saw her go in, and she denied, nobody else would admit to being in there. So I have to tell the story to the group of people just like I told you. Now, how many people do you think believed me?
I'm guessing very few.
You would be exactly right. And so what I did by my honesty was give the murderer a free pass. And she, I don't know how many more people she killed. And I don't believe they ever caught her, because you can go so far into the game and then you can say, I did it, I quit. I'm not going to try any longer. It's getting too easy to maybe get caught. I don't think they ever caught her, because I got votes for round after round.
Well, and you didn't talk about the scoring, because you can play the game either with or without the scoring component. But
right.
How does one win the game?
Well, In fact, it's actually geared in favor of the murderer, so that it's set up so that the chances of people voting correctly, because in the course of the discussion, enough red herrings come up just with people talking about where, who was where, and so forth and so on, that the murderer is likely to get away with a few murders. And so because of that, you get 10 points for a successful murder, but you get 15 points for a successful guess, because you never get any reinforcement. In other words, when the body comes back out and says the murderer is still at large, you have no clue how close you were. And there have been cases where they got within one vote on one round, and the next round, almost nobody votes for the correct person. So it's 15 points for every correct guess, and then you throw in 2 points if the method's not sure. Then you can get 17 points. However, there is also a thing called the prime victim that's in there. And the way that works is the indirect methods, the poisoning, you're allowed to put a poison bug under somebody's pillow, so if they're, or under the pillow of a bed. So if they're told to take a nap, they're supposed to feel for that bug. Well, if you use indirect or electrocution, you just put a wire across a door, or, you know, like an extension cord. So if you were to have a body that was killed that way, it's very hard to figure out who did it, because first you have to put the poison cup out or the bug in there, and then you're not around anymore, and then it may take some time before somebody goes into the room, drinks the right thing, or lies down. Then it takes a period of time before people find them. And so in order to backtrack all that and figure out who does it, who did it, it's very difficult. So the prime victim works like this. At the beginning of the game, everybody gets a card, and they sign their name on it. And then they pass it to their left, and the next person signs their name below the name that is already on the card. They're all shuffled together, and one is put in the murderer's envelope. The reason there's two names on there is if I'm the murderer, and there was only one name and I got myself, there couldn't be a prime victim. I'd go to the second name. Otherwise, it's just the first name. The way that works is, unless you luck out, if you want to go get the prime victim, you actually have to go find them. And kill them, so you're tied to the scene of the crime, so to speak. And in that case, the prime victim is 20 points, and then it's 20 points for each subsequent murder.
Ah.
So that if you really decide that you want to win hands down, you have to expose yourself to more risk.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there are games where the murderer is very successful and manages to kill everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, the key to a success is you quit when there's only three of you left.
Ah.
And the reason for that is, remember, 2/3 of the people have to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So that what happens is the last vote you succeed with is the 3-person. Then you quit. Okay. Because with 3 people, your vote doesn't count. So if the other two guess you, then they got you. But if they guess each other or some other thing, then you made it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you kill one of them, the other person knows it's you, so you don't gain anything from a vote there. And if you kill both of them, there's no meeting, and so you don't get anything for that either.
Right. Other than the bragging rights that you killed everybody.
Right. But the best, we've had some that, I had one where I killed 6, I think, and not a single person voted for me a single round.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, but that was many years ago. Now everybody thinks I did it. So my chances of being successful, when I play, they're not very good unless I'm playing with a lot of other people who've played a lot of times. Because
well,
there's some other people that... What?
Well, you have a knack for... the interrogation lawyeries conversations in those meetings.
Well, that's true.
You ask questions, you do.
That's true, but I will admit to being one of many. There's a lot of other people who do that as well.
Well, that's true, but I haven't played with them, so.
Well, that, okay.
I can only speak from my personal experience having played with you.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And so, okay, so I'm going to throw the phone number out because we're about halfway done. You believe that?
Well, my worry when I looked at all the potential questions, because one of the other ways you could describe me is being verbose. And so I thought, oh, God, we'll never get through all of that. So I think that's a good idea. People can ask what they want to know.
That's right. So I'm going to put that phone number out. It's 347-215-8390. So if you either have a question for Dave about the murder game or the process of inventing it, or you have a short story you want to share about playing, give us a call because we'd love to hear from you. And if you're in the chat room, go ahead and type in your question or your comment either way. So until we see a call or see a chat question, I'll keep working on my list of questions that I have here today. Because, oh, yes. The game existed for a number of years before you, quote, self-published it, that it wasn't nice typed up cards, laminated cards, et cetera. So what was your adventure with game companies? Did you have an adventure with game companies?
Yes, I did have an adventure with game companies. I never had intended to sell this myself. And so because we had played it for the first few years, I mean, that Christmas break I told you about, we played it about six, after the first night, we just played it almost every night. And so when I approached game companies, the standard response that I got always was, well, are you a professional game inventor? I said, well, what do you mean by that? And they said, have you published the game? And I said, no. And so they didn't want to talk to me. And I noted to them, I noted to a couple of them the idea of the Catch-22. And they didn't know what that was. And I had to explain that to them, particularly in the one case. I said, you know, if nobody will buy my game, there's no way I can ever be a professional game inventor. And he just kind of blew that off. So basically, when that didn't work, I had a lot of other irons in the fire, like figuring out what I was going to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got into teaching, that is all-consuming. So I didn't get around to publishing it till years later. And kudos to your sister, Wendy, who was very helpful in when actually finding me a printer. So that was many years later. But it had to do with, well, I can see this game company thing isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of other irons on the fire, and I was more concentrating on them than I was pursuing the murder game, other than still playing it.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I didn't think I had a gold mine here, and I still don't because of those limitations I told you before.
Mm-hmm. Although it is a unique experience because it's never the same game twice. Like some of the murder mysteries you get are pretty predictable. You can play them once and it's like, okay. Or maybe they have two or three variations, but they're very limited.
That's what's really unique about this. I don't know how many times have you played? Do you know?
I have no idea because it was over decades. So I really have no idea.
And I'm in the I'm in the same boat. I mean, I've played this game. I venture to say, a few hundred times, probably.
Well, because I also worked for Upward Bound, and therefore that was one of the most popular summer weekend activities, was playing the murder game.
And before you worked, we had access to Sunnyside whenever we wanted it. So when we talked to some of our older students, the first 5-6 years that I worked, we were playing maybe 3 times a week.
Oh, my.
Because the college prep students would say, well, we want to have a game too. We don't have much homework tonight. Would you be willing to do one on Thursday night or something? So we did a lot of playing when we had that office building available.
Yeah, and that does help.
And I will share with you another story if we've got a moment.
We do.
I used to go through, there were private game stores then that I was marketing through. And I was marketing through the largest privately owned game store in the state of Iowa, which was in Des Moines. And he And the only reason I'm not going through there anymore is he sold out years ago. I mean, years ago, and they tore down the building and whatnot. When he retired, the business died, but he went through a fair number. And I was going into his store, and I came in, and he was busy in one corner, and I kind of was on my way over to the game shelf where it was, and I heard these two women talking, and the one says, "Oh, you've got to buy this game because you can play it over and over again. We play it all the time." So I went around the corner, and I didn't know either of the two women, and they didn't know each other. But the one was looking to buy a murder game, and the other one had already bought mine and was literally selling her my game.
Did you introduce yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I thanked her profusely for doing that and told her how much I appreciated it.
And I'm sure she was thrilled to meet you.
I don't know about that. I was scruffier. Well, I'm still scruffy, but she at least could say she met the person that invented it.
There you go. Well, and I will share for people who are listening, if they're interested in purchasing the murder game, they can go to www.dave, D-A-V-E, Hunt, H-U-N-T-S, murder, M-U-R-D-E-R, game, G-A-M-E.com. And on that site, people can put stories from their experience. You can read more about the game. And then you can also go to brainbonanza.com because that's where you're directed to purchase it through our online store. And it regularly sells for $12.95, and every now and again we'll run a special. But it is so much fun. Speaking of fun, we've talked about interesting stories that resulted from playing the game. And one of the ones I'll share was when we played in a Catholic rectory next to a cemetery in Fayette, Iowa. And the priest was gone that particular weekend, so he wasn't there with us. And I was in a bedroom, lying in the bed, reading a magazine, and I'm, you know, in there for, 10 minutes. And I go to get up, and I went to step on the floor and literally almost stepped on somebody's hand that had flopped out from under the bed. After I had sat down, I was like, and I did. I think I had to peel myself off the ceiling. That was my increase the blood pressure, heart rate, whole thing, because that freaked me out.
And I was so not in that game, I don't think.
I thought you were there, but I think you were there, but you made
really?
Me out of.
Yeah, I didn't remember that one. Because we played in another rectory in, what's the little town south of Kalmar?
Yeah, that is, it's going to escape me. It wasn't in Fayette, that's where it was.
Oh, that's the, okay, we played.
Little town. Yeah.
Yeah, we played there a few times. The priest played one time, and that was, that was the night the big storm came up. Lightning,
mm-hmm.
You know, and outside the one room, you can see the old cemetery. And we were having a meeting in there, and there were only about six of us left. And he said, "The priest, you know, the priest wouldn't do it." And I looked at him, and I thought, aha. And I said, "And the teacher wouldn't do it, aha." I'm sure, and it wasn't either one of us, but all the people that weren't the murderer probably were scared to death of both of us.
Yeah,
so they probably all both, we probably did the murderer more favors than anything by doing that.
Yeah, now I'll think of the name of that little town. I just drove through it in August again. Now I gotta.
Yes. I want to say Lawler. No, it's not Lawler.
No.
Well, whatever it is. And anybody from that town, I apologize for offending you because I can't think of the name of it. I'm old.
Yeah, well, we have so much that we have to remember, but that's another segment, too, on your memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of interesting stories, you talked about, and I think it's on the website as well, that there have been several marriages that resulted from playing the murder game. Do you want to tell us about one of those?
I know one of them for sure. And
okay.
The others I'm not so sure about. But a friend of mine, a colleague on staff who I'd worked with for years, Bill Fluette, tells the story about how there was another staff person playing. Her name was Brooke, and he really wanted to meet her. And as luck would have it, on the activity cards, there's a couple of them that say, "Flirt, find somebody to flirt with." And he happened to pull that card. And he says, "Someone is looking out for me." And he went and started flirting with her, and it was a very successful flirtation. And they've been married now for years, and he's a elementary principal in Northern Illinois, and they're raising their twins. And it's a neat story, but he'll be the first one to tell you it was the flirt card and the murder game that brought them together.
And that's something that I don't think a lot of people could say.
No, I think it's quite unique.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any other fun or favorite stories that come to mind from your years of playing?
Oh, yeah, there's a few. The one funny one is that this is in Norby House, I think, but my brother killed me and he stuffed me under a bed. Now, I have allergies.
Oh,
and
no.
This bed is kind of dusty. And so he then brings somebody else in to play cards. And I'm having troubles. And so I'm going, well, he knows I'm allergic. So he's up above. He's and he's wheezing and coughing, making all kinds of noise. So then they leave. And I'm already, I think that's funny. So I'm on the edge of giggling as it is. And then somebody else comes in the room and he kills him and he wants to stuff him under the other bed. Now, understand that I'm not very tall. The other guy is about 6'5", and the bed is shorter and lower, so they're having this whispered argument. Get under that bed. I'm too tall. I can't. And finally, he got under the bed. Well, this is it. I'm about ready to just break into peals of laughter. And so I stick my hand out, and then the next guy to come in almost steps on my hand, so I had to pull it back in, and that just struck me so funny, I just started laughing. Which allowed me to be found. Mm-hmm. So there are funny things that happen. I mean, it can be funny, but it is more often scary.
Yes.
The two or three probably scariest things that come to mind was, one was in a house with a long hallway, and in the middle of the hallway was a closet, but it didn't have a door. It had a shower curtain. And that particular hallway was very dark. And so somebody was walking along to go to the end bedroom, and they hit a hand that was sticking out.
Oh, my.
And they weren't sure what they hit, and they bumped down, and they felt the hand and just let go. And another one was when I was coming up the steps, and this is how scared people can get. I heard this blood-curdling shriek. I get right to the top of the steps, and this woman comes running down the hall and grabs me. And she's going, and it takes her I don't know how long, but a period of time to get out what happened. Well, what happened was she had been told to go in and take a nap. There was somebody in the closet whose variation card said fall out when the next person comes in. Well, he fell out like a redwood tree, and that just did it for her. So that was pretty scary.
Right.
And another one, you may be told to take a bath or whatnot. And obviously you're not going to do that, but this one house we played in had a really comfortable tub. So this person was just sitting in the tub relaxing. Well, the other thing that it had was a window above the tub with a very wide windowsill. There was a body up there with the curtains pulled over it. And so she's sitting there and all of a sudden she hears this noise and a hand flopped out right above her. And
oh,
she says she got out of the tub without, I mean, in one move.
Mm-hmm.
So those were some of the more scary times.
Oh, my. And when I'm not even sure when, because I didn't see Al go down a flight of stairs in two steps, but I think that's how he described it. Was in the back of there's a Dursuit, and he had seen somebody fall out of a closet in an office and spooked him, and he swore he only touched two steps on the way down those stairs.
Oh, I believe it. That's it. If you let your imagination, if you get caught up in the game, and that's the best. We had a bed and breakfast down here in Tipton that used to be a bed and breakfast, and they ran the murder game. And I guess it was the Augustana theater majors would come over and play. Well, if you have a group like that, it would have been interesting to talk to them about some of those games. Because
mm-hmm.
I imagine, and that was a house that was three stories with a kind of a cupola up on the fourth story.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's really something. And the guy who was running it had done a lot of community theater, so he hosted it as if he were the butler.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, yeah. And the sad part was I never got to play there, but I knew those games were going on, and we sold murder games through that for a while.
Oh, neat. Well, let's take a peek. We've got 15 minutes, and I don't see any calls.
That's okay. I can talk forever.
Yeah, I know. Don't see any questions in the chat room, so we'll move on down our...
Well, I hope there's people out there listening.
Well, and I think I mentioned to you, I have a number of people who have conflicts on Wednesday night, so they download it.
Oh, good.
Recording and listen to it later. And then it's out there until I take it off, which right now I'm coming up on my two-year anniversary. So there are a lot of segments that are out there that people go back later and find. Or somebody will say, oh, you have to go listen to this segment with on the Fourth Awakening book. Or you have to go, and so people will just go back and find stuff. So word of mouth will say, hey, there's a great interview with Dave Hunt about the murder game. Go listen. And speaking of which, if people do listen later and they want to get a hold of you, we had talked about the best way to do that is to send an email to me, because people who know Dave know he's uses about as little technology as any human being right now. He does have a telephone because he's on it, and he does drive cars, and he does have a television, and that's pretty much it, right?
That's pretty much it. I keep saying that I'll get into the 21st century, but with each succeeding year, I'm less motivated to do so. So
right.
Good plan. Now, if somebody wants to call me or write me, they certainly can.
Mm-hmm. And if you sent me an email, then I can pass on your question and your information to Dave, too, and he can get back to you. But if you want to give your phone number or address, feel free.
Yeah, and I think it might be on the murder game instructions, because on the back we put originally the idea was you could order right off the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's 563-886-6813. And the address is P.O. Box 143, Tipton, Iowa, 52772.
Okay, 52772. Yeah, so those of you who haven't called or written Dave for a long time, you'll just get flooded with cool mail. And yeah, if you do have any questions about the game or ideas you want to bounce off Dave, give him a call. He's always open to talking about new ideas.
Well, what
and,
you've done what you've done, and I think my other person that's doing this have done, which I think is really neat, is to have people who are share their stories, because each house you play it in is different, and the people you play with are different, and that leads to tremendously interesting results.
Yes. Because it is different if you have one set of stairs versus two sets of stairs.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you have one bathroom versus three bathrooms. So, yes, it does make for very interesting, whether you have alcohol or no alcohol.
Although my recommendation is little alcohol or none.
Clearly.
Yeah, well, just because if you have a bunch of drunk people, their imaginations... tend not to be as sharp, and it tends to detract from the game.
Well, yes, and I'm thinking more like cocktails, not as in beer bash.
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely. But there's a lot of cards that say take a drink. I'm not so sure it's a good idea. And you have to have drinks out there so you can mark them.
Right, so you do need to have things like water or lemonade or something, tea.
Right, you have to... You have to, if you're hosting a game, you kind of have to think all that stuff through.
Yes, and snacks, et cetera. Go ahead.
Well, there's some hints. We threw in hints in the instructions.
Such as?
Well, one I know is winter games are a little better than summer games because it gets dark earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can start earlier, and sometimes you can have two games in a night. The other thing, and this comes from a friend of mine, when I put it in, we were talking about different things, and he said, well, you should wear, like, he wore army pants, because they have pockets all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is you can just take the weapons and keep them on you, so you sort of have stuff to pick from. So you become a walking arsenal. and they're baggy, so nobody can tell you're carrying anything around. And I thought that was clever. That's on the in the instructions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we'll clarify that the weapons are hidden in common places that everybody knows at the beginning of the game because you don't know who the murderer is going to be until you draw your card. And those are the pieces that don't come with the game, so you need to get like those little plastic bugs or little hypodermic, or you can just be creative and say, okay, this red pen is a hypodermic, or which we've done too, especially if you break things.
Yeah, exactly. And if candles unnerve you, you can get those little plug-in bulb things.
Yeah, the plug-in nightlights.
Yeah, and you can get the same effect with that. I like candles because of the atmosphere.
Right, and but, well, and have fire moving, it causes that flickering effect. And
right, but when we play with our students, we use the plug-ins.
Yes, because it is safer and they're not always as cautious.
Correct.
So you've invented another game that's not available for sale right now, as far as I know. But didn't you invent a racing game, too?
Oh, I've got about four or five games I've invented.
Well, there you go.
And I still do them. I have the racing game set up in my other room as we speak. But none of them are going to get... I don't see publishing any of them at this point. One's a football game, one's a basketball game. I have a racing game, and then I have a takeoff on the life game, which is kind of the heredity and following who becomes the king and that sort of thing.
Ooh, see, because as creative as you were in the history classroom, I'm thinking there are probably some real creative historical games that are yet to be invented. Just planting seeds, Dave.
you never know. And the problem with the things that I have, I like them, but I know they're incomplete. If you're going to create a sports game, like my football game, I've got interceptions, I've even got fumbles, injuries, you know, I've got all kinds of stuff in them. But if you're going to do it, like I haven't figured out how to do a blocked punt yet, okay, until I worked out a way to do that, there's no way that I could sell it because a real purist would say, wait a minute, and they'd be right.
Right.
And the same thing is... Say what?
They would say, how do you block a punt?
Exactly. And with the racing game, I like it. It's sort of like solitaire. You can play it with one person, in fact, and I do often. But you need little race cars. And as a purist myself, they ought to look like little race cars. Well, race cars are so expensive that if you were to get enough little race cars that look like the actual cars, the amount you would spend for a game would be prohibitive.
Yes, that's true. So, okay, well, if you had someone who is listening, what suggestions would you share with people who have ideas to create games or invent games?
Well, first, and to tell you the truth, I don't know if this still exists, but when I got serious about copywriting it, I had to find out about copyright lawyers because there's special copyright lawyers. At the time I did it, there were only three firms in the state of Iowa that did it, that would do copyrights for you. And two were in Des Moines, and one was, I think, in Davenport. So I had to find a firm, and I had to do that. Which is quite cheap. At that time, it was quite cheap and it was very easy. So that's not a big problem, but there's a way to do it.
Yeah, but more importantly, you want to make sure that you do pay for the copyright process because if you ever want to contest something, then you've got the legal documentation to do that.
Exactly.
Saying, yeah, here's my copyright and I dated it to state. Well,
Yeah.
And you were going to say?
Well, and then the second thing. Is they used to have, and this was a government program to help entrepreneurs. It was called the Small Business Development Center, and it was through the University of Iowa. And they had their MBA, master's degree people, their MBA students would provide you free advice. Mm-hmm. So
there's one for the community college system in Iowa. I think a lot of them also have resource centers, at least the one in Cedar Rapids, Iowa does.
Great, because that was the discussion I had that talked about how do you package this. Well, it comes in an envelope instead of a box. And the reason it comes in an envelope is you're buying an idea. We can keep the price down.
Right.
If we put it in a box, then that jumps the price way up, and you're still buying the same idea.
Right.
So we talked about packaging. They showed me how to find the, you know, what to do about the picture on the front. There's a disclaimer on it. They talked about that. And they talked about pricing. What's a wholesale price? What should be a retail price? And so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also talked about the idea of selling it wholesale versus retail. And so that, from the business side, getting somebody that knows what's going on. There's also a thing with retired people.
Score,
seniors, something. I think it's called SCORE.
It is.
I imagine that would be just as helpful.
Yes.
And so anything like that, I mean, I think you need to go talk to people about what you need to do to make this work. The second thing I think that is important, too, is I didn't begin to go public with this until I had enough money to print it without causing the economic hardship.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well, and now, too, and I'm going to interrupt you and say, with computers and printers that many people have at home,
mm-hmm.
That you could do a lot of that printing yourself.
Could you do the cards? But I'm not so sure you can get
yes.
cards. Maybe you could do cardstock cards, too.
Yes, and self-laminators or even small laminating machines are relatively inexpensive. So that's an option, too.
Right. And you could, so you could literally, rather than using a professional printer, you could maybe do that all in-house. Although there again, if you don't have all that stuff, then
right.
what you have, then you've got this expenditure money to get the laminator and so forth and so on.
Right. Exactly. In our last few minutes, Dave, we've talked before that you have lived your life doing things that you love, things that you're passionate about. So what words would you share with listeners related to living your passions?
That's a really good point, and I guess don't be deterred. The chances of me getting a teaching job when I first started looking was between slim and none. And I sent 300 inquiry letters. I filled out probably 100 applications before I finally got my interview and then my job offer. So I guess don't give up on those dreams. Nothing is worse than a person sitting there at the age of 45, let's say, with a bunch of woulda, shoulda, couldas.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very fortunate in that I, both in my professional life and in my personal life, I've gotten to do and enjoy a tremendous amount of things that I'm passionate about and interested in. And to some degree, I feel lucky, but I ought not to feel lucky because this is within everybody's grasp. You just
yes,
reach for that brass ring and go for it.
Yes, and make those choices and find those supportive people in your life. So
exactly.
In our last minute, Dave, we only have one left.
Okay.
I will, and we can go over a little, but yeah, we're down to one. I'm going to remind people that they can find The Murder Game at brainbonanza.com or davehuntmurdergame.com. And you can reach Dave at 563-886-6813 or P.O. Box 143, Tipton, Iowa, 52772. And no, he does not have email. So send an email. You can send one to brainbonanza@gmail.com, and I can contact Dave. So in anything that you would like listeners to take away from our interview tonight, Dave?
I hope that they found it interesting, that they found it enjoyable, and that maybe they've got an idea percolating in the back of their mind. And they've said, gee, I wish I could do this. Maybe this will spur them on to perhaps explore the idea more thoroughly.
Well, good. And I think sometimes, too, it doesn't have to be for other people, because for you, the murder game started out being something you wanted to do and you wanted to play. And then it since grew to be shared with other people.
Exactly.
So
the murder game, or the racing game still is, just for
mm-hmm.
me. And I take it up to Luther just because I was going to play it, and I noticed kids enjoy playing it. So we play it during the summer.
There you go. And when you're playing that game, it allows you to talk about all sorts of stuff.
Exactly.
There you go. So I am a big fan of family game nights, as is my 8-year-old, who reminds us from time to time, we haven't had a family game night in a while. Yeah, playing games is a great way to have fun, to grow, and particularly with a murder game, not only to have that atmosphere of suspense, but also, some problem solving and some adventure involved. So, Dave, thanks so much for spending an hour with us.
You bet, and I appreciate the time. And remember, it's also a great mixer.
Oh, yes. It is a good way for people who don't know each other to spend some time together and just get to talk while they're in a suspenseful environment and people are dropping dead around them.
Yes, well said.
Okay, well, thanks again, Dave. And it's been a pleasure talking with you, a pleasure playing the murder game, and I hope that our interview inspires some people to give it a shot, because it is a lot of fun and will create more stories for people to share.
Great.
So it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And to my listeners, thank you for spending your time here. Hope that you have heard some sparks that spark you to action, to do something. Maybe it's buy the murder game. Maybe it's visit the website. Maybe it's just have a family game night with your family or with your friends. So until next week, stay safe, have fun, and remember, it's important to play. So we'll be with you again. Take care, stay safe, and continue to make a positive difference in the lives you touch.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.